Insight Meditation 101, Day 1, First Talk. Why we would do this practice. We human beings have evolved very sophisticated neocortices, and we have survived extremely well on this planet. But the method with which we have survived, the method of thinking with which we have survived, is we have learned to moderate, even manipulate our circumstances to suit us. And that's why we've overrun the planet. We do this by, when things are pleasing to us and satisfying and delicious and we like them, we are able to control, basically, who our friends are, what kind of food we eat. We can grow the food we like. We can buy the food we like. We can choose the people, our companions. We have exercised a lot of control over that. And we also can somewhat limit the unpleasant things, you know, the nasty people and the poisonous food and the, you know, the uncomfortable circumstances. We can put roofs over our heads and we can dress warmly in cold weather and we, you know, most of us, I mean, I don't know if it's most on the planet, because a lot of people on the planet aren't able to get all the food that they would like, but the majority of humans have managed to survive very nicely by being able to control this. We have done this so well that we have made basically our, I don't know what to the word to use is, our God, this manipulation. We believe completely in this scheme. It's worked for us, so it's reasonable that we believe in it, but unfortunately, it is only a limitedly successful endeavor. We can't always get what we want, and we can't always avoid what we don't. But we try all the harder. When it fails, we try all the harder and we complain. So if we're not satisfied, then something's wrong. And if we have to put up with difficult things like illness, for instance, or mean neighbors, or fighting families or whatever it is, then there's a problem, we think, that needs us to solve it. Because we have learned that if we do whatever these strategies are to do, that we can be more comfortable. That's the problem. We have a problem because we are not, in fact, gods, and we can't utterly do that. It's not utterly successful. It's limitedly successful. But it's the only way we know. So we find our well-being dependent upon how successfully we can manipulate what comes to us, don't we? And we complain when we fail, and we often try all the harder or blame somebody for if we've failed. This is actually an outrageous form of arrogance, because it makes us really believe that if I can arrange the world such and such, then I'll be happy, and if I can't, I won't. We think that the world's supposed to then suit us. And so our efforts are manipulative rather than allowing and accommodating. And then all the wise teachers who've ever come through the human realm realize that there's limits to that and that there's another way to be even more content and satisfied and happy than that manipulative way. A way that makes us okay in spite of what's happening, not because of what's happening. Anyway, because, of course, we can't completely make it work. We get old even if we don't want to get old. We get sick even when we don't want to get sick. We get happy at the oddest silly little things. You know, we're not as in charge as we like to think. The deep truth of well-being isn't exploiting and manipulating and rearranging life to suit moi. It's learning to accommodate all of it, to enjoy the enjoyable, to allow and tolerate the unpleasant, and remain okay. That's a much deeper and more reliable form of well-being than the one dependent on circumstance. Yeah? When we're just dependent on circumstance and things are going not so well, we will complain, we will be afraid, we will blame, we will try all the harder to do something about it. We will blame ourselves or feel all these various forms of dissatisfaction. That's a pretty stressful, all those are stressful states I've just described. So oftentimes we're stressed by the fact that life goes up and down. To learn to accommodate to the ups and downs rather than be, you know, tossed up into ecstasy and then trashed down into misery, to learn to be accommodating allows us a much more sense of ease going through it, going through what we're inevitably going to go through. There's nothing wrong that you're going to get sick. It happens. It's a part of the deal. You're going to get old and you're going to die sooner or later. It's the way it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And people are going to insult you sometimes. So it's part of the thing. It's going to be beautiful and then it's going to suddenly end. The beauty one day will end and there'll be some tragedy or less dramatic difficulty. But we don't really believe it. We don't go around behaving as though we know that that's the case, that sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's great. Theoretically we know, but we don't live as though that's the truth. We live like it's supposed to all be great. So that's the sort of main change. And the Buddha is just one human who, regular human, no saintliness or divine intervention here, just a human being who was smart enough to see that and to see the truth of it and to see the limits of our normal ways of going about and say, you know what, there's a better way to do this. You'll be much happier if you learn to accommodate what's the truth and allow the truth to be the way it is instead of trying to always make it fix to suit you. In doing this strategy, what happens is the way our minds have developed is that this is what I call we glom onto things. Most of the time, we're just carrying on our lives, and certain bits of our experience show up dramatically for ourselves. We don't notice everybody, but certain ones. We don't notice everything, but certain things. We notice the squeaky things, the squeaky wheels. The things that squeak at us our minds are glomming onto them. Most of the stuff we don't bother with. The stuff that's particularly nice, we zero in on. And the stuff that's particularly not nice, we zero in on. We notice the creepy people, and we notice the beautiful ones, and we miss everybody else. You know, all those middle-aged, average, beige-looking people, we don't even bother with, you know. But the interesting ones or the threats, you know, we're really aware of. And the same with anything and everything. The flowers that stand out, oh, that's beautiful, we notice. And all the rest of it, we totally ignore. It's not that they are louder, it's that we notice them. And so the training that we do in meditation is a training to learn to undo some of that, the habit of manipulating, of complaining, of chasing good things, of avoiding or being worried about or scared of or mad at the difficult things, and stopping getting glomming and allowing a much more sort of generalized open awareness, allowing all of the things to come and go and be known and be seen. And it's just not the way we've evolved. So it's a radical training. It's not a complicated thing, but it's radically different than the way we've survived, which is that manipulative, glomming kind of behavior. We don't just glom onto things. We want the pleasant ones. We glom because we're wanting them, and we glom on the unpleasant things because they're bugging us and worrying us or whatever it is, offending us in some form or other. Right? Is this making sense? This is what it's like. Okay. So this is a skill of developing a different approach, if you like, a different relationship with life than the chasing and the avoiding, which and the ignoring, which are the three ways we usually do it. As we learn this new skill, and we start, you know, it has to be simple and easy and doable for people, and we start really quite simply. What happens is there's less need to chase the pleasant. There's less fear and struggle against the unpleasant. And there's more interest in the stuff that we were ignoring. And when we are able to not need so much of the good and not get so distressed by the unpleasant and be actually more interested in the rest of life, life becomes richer, less struggly, and less needy. Right? We don't need so much. We're more content. We don't get so upset. We're more easy. And we're actually, life is richer because we're more open to all of it instead of the normal, if you like, the way we've evolved. And that's nicer. It's nicer to actually be connected with more of life and see beauty where you never even bothered to see it before. It's much, much more comfortable, to not be always have to have more and more. The state that we're typically in, you know, you're bored. Some squeaky wheel has stopped squeaking, and now what are you going to do? Well, then I need to eat something, or I need to change channels, or I need to phone my friend up, or what am I going to do now? I'm bored and lonely unless there's some stimulus. That subsides, and we're able to be comfortable with just a normal day. That's a relief, isn't it? To be always having to go for the next stimulus. Or when something's uncomfortable, oh no, you meet somebody. When you meet somebody and you haven't seen them for a little while, you meet your neighbor or, you know, you meet a friend you haven't seen for a while, how are you doing? What's happening? What do they tell you? They don't tell you, life is rich and I'm really mellow. They tell you, oh my God, you wouldn't believe I had this awful thing with my mother-in-law the other day. And then they tell you all this, right? Because we focus on the squeaky stuff, the bothersome stuff. The others isn't, when you read newspapers, you open the newspaper, it was a lovely day on Salt Spring, nothing happened, everyone was very cooperative. You know, it's the dramas that we think, you know, and what about Hollywood movies? I mean, you know, take them to the absolute maximum, you know, the extremes of intensity of our reactivity. It's very stressful that way. So life becomes more, people would ask me early when I was meditating, why on earth would you go away and do a 10-day retreat? Well, what's the point of that? Like, how on earth can you say that that benefits you? And so I would say things like, it's like having hair conditioner and long hair and you've just washed your hair. I mean, this won't work for some of the men or anyone who's only ever had short hair, but when you have longer hair and it's newly washed, it's all tangled up and you're trying to get a comb through it. Well, if you put conditioner on it, the comb goes through the tangles much more easily. You go through your life much more easily. Or I'd say it's like adding engine lube oil to the engine. The engine is churning along. Life is churning along. But if you add enough lubrication, it's smoother. Or I would say it's like pouring oil on the water. You know, you're in a boat and it's choppy water and you know, it's covered with oil. I know this is not a great image, is it? But actually it's not so rough. It glides more. It's that kind of effect. Life is life. The waves are choppy. The engine is churning. The hair gets tangled. But with this training, we don't get so stuck in the tangles. We don't bump against the bumps. The grind, the daily grind of life flows more gently. It's less stressful. There's less frisson. It's easier. That's why we do it. It's not a miracle cure. It doesn't make, you know, you become a saint overnight. It doesn't change your deep flaws. But it modifies everything The first thing that we find is that we are able to have some calm. Meditators are calmer. We aren't quite so caught in the squeaky reactions. We're more grounded, for one thing, more steady. Another thing that happens is we can't help but see more deeply what's really going on. Normally in daily life, an untrained mind, which is most of you, the mind that's never been trained in any form of meditation, is very, it's not just glomming on to certain things, it's very jumpy. It's very speedy. We've got an amazingly rapid mind. We think thoughts very fast and we're busy doing this and then this and then this. It's actually an incredibly brilliant thing we have in here. But it tends to glance superficially off something and jump to the next and jump to the next. That's part of our survival wiring. There's been all kinds and now more and more tests of the brain function. And some psychologists did this study and discovered that the reason we have survived, one of the reasons why we've survived so well as humans is by being jumpy and nervy. If you weren't jumpy and nervy and the dinosaur was coming, you'd get eaten up, you know. The survivors were the jumpy, nervy ones, ready for anything and about to, you know, respond quickly. So it's a survival tactic. But when we're jumpy and nervy, the mind is noticing this, then this, then this. It can't really stay very long noticing anything. So it doesn't have a very deep understanding. It has a very good, quick, instant take. this is good, I'll go this way, this is not so good, I'll avoid it. It's a very nervy way of reacting. But we sacrifice with that kind of mind. We sacrifice the ability to really see deeply into any situation because we're on to the next. When we are able to train the mind to be more steady, which is what meditation, one of the things meditation does, we find that we are able to look at and then keep looking at a situation. And instead of having an instant take on it, we're able to stay a little longer with any situation, a person, a conversation, and an itch, and understand it more. When you understand something, you go, oh, I see. And you actually more easily relate to that thing. If you just have an instant hit on something, nope, don't like that person, they're discarded before you've even had a moment of realizing who they really are. You're going on your instant likes and dislikes. That's mostly how we function. But when you're able to stay more slowly, it doesn't mean that you lose the ability to be quick. We don't sacrifice that. But you develop an ability to stay a little longer, and then you understand things better. You understand somebody. You're much more able to be empathetic with somebody when you understand them than when you've made an instant judgment and then you've just said, no, they're the enemy and that's that. So, for instance, when you think of all the conflicts in the world, if we could just sit down and listen to each other for a few more minutes, there would be much less conflict, wouldn't there? Because you'd understand each other. There'd be more empathy. So right from having more friends and easy with people to the end of wars comes from this training of the mind to actually have some space to get to know and understand things. So that's a huge, even just you and your irritating neighbor will be less irritated with training the mind. So it's not, at first it calms us, but then it allows a certain sense of understanding. With understanding, there's more actually liking. It's very interesting. You discover that you like more things than you thought, than you did before, because you make space for them. You become friendlier, which makes you happier with things and people. It's wonderful. That's a side effect that you might not have thought would happen. And then another thing that happens is this is what gets a little more profound. The root to this is you get to see not just things, but you get to see yourself. And you get to see your own behaviors. Initially, that's not very nice. In fact, it's shocking. And then it's embarrassing. And then it's like, oh my God, I can't believe my mind is so crazy. I am obsessing. I had no idea how many thousands of times a day I was a worrier or whatever. You get to see inside yourself because one of the radical, I'm going to have to finish that sentence in a moment. I will. One of the radical aspects of meditation training is it doesn't just calm us down. It doesn't just allow us to see more deeply everything and understand. The radical part is we're not looking at the external world, which we normally depend on for well-being. We're looking at ourselves and how we are with the external world. The radical thing is a 180-degree shift from looking out there at circumstances and events and people to looking in here, looking at how you are with the out there. And that's really radical because we depend on the out there, we think. As we're able in training to notice what's going on in here, first of all, you get to see what's going on in here, and that's what's so shocking. Initially, that's hard, and this is the reason why people don't want to meditate, because they don't want to see their stuff. But the only way to moderate your behavior is to see it first. So you have to go through this period of this honesty with what's really going on in here and seeing, I'm blaming her. It's not about her, it's mind blaming her. And as we get to see how we do that, we also, the next thing that happens is we get to understand ourselves, which makes it okay. First, the seeing ourselves is like, oh my God. But then as we understand ourselves, it's like, oh, well, of course I'm like that. We then get to be more empathetic with ourselves. We then get to like ourselves. When we get to like ourselves more, we get to understand ourselves, and then we understand other people because they're just like us. So we're the experiment. We're the human biology we're the human laboratory, and we're scientists, and we're exploring this human. But it's the same as that human. So we get to understand each other more. So we become actually much more cooperative beings, more relatable beings, because we understand each other better, because we see what it's like. The result of that is we actually don't just see what it's like being a human being. We see all the things we do that we don't need to do. We see the good things about ourselves. We get to really appreciate ourselves because we're really looking at ourselves, which we haven't done that much before. But we also get to see the stuff we do that's neurotic and that's extra and that's unnecessary and that's actually harmful. That's silly, that's futile. To keep on blaming the weather for being bad, for instance, is ridiculous. I mean, it's just raining sometimes. Like, this is January. It's on the West Coast. What do we expect, you know? And so we get to see how silly it is, a lot of the things we do. And when we see that, we see the things we do which aren't so helpful, we aren't going to do them. We're not going to not do them because we're telling ourselves to be good, you know, or to be saints or something. That's not how it happens. It's not through will. It's through realizing this is just stressful and not helpful, this behavior. So why would I keep doing it? And so we become nicer, better, as well as happier and more understanding. We actually become wiser. And the word that's used a lot in the translations of these teachings is more wholesome. I like that word, wholesome, like healthy in the way we behave, because we see when we're not. We see when we are and we see when we're not. We see what it's like to behave in a way that's wholesome, that's helpful and sensible and useful and workable and all those good things. We see that. We see what it's like to be that kind of person. We see the effects in the world. So, of course, we want to do more of it because it feels great. And when we see that ourselves being neurotic or being, you know, unnecessarily negative or whatever, we see that. We're not going to want to keep doing that, so we'll do that less. Because we understand ourselves. So the change, it's a slow, gradual transformation based on understanding. Yeah? You with me? Make sense? So there's a deep shift that happens gradually over time. We become nicer. We want to be great. We want to be really nice people. We all do. Everyone does. But we go about it often in ways that don't actually help that. No. And then when we give up, we then just go back to our old baggage, our old ways or our old addictions, or I don't want to think about it, I'm going to have another drink, you know. I'm going to Vegas, I don't want to think about my family problems, you know. We don't know how to deal with it. This way we learn to be able to be with all of it in a way that's actually more and more helpful. So life gets pleasant, life gets more conditioner in the hair, right? We get to be more responsible for the stuff that we are responsible for, our contribution, and we get to be less responsible for the stuff that we don't have to worry about, like the weather. And we don't have to always be complaining about the things we can't do anything about. It's ridiculous. So we don't. We get more realistic. But the things that we should do something and can do something about, we care all the more about because we realize we have a choice. When I was a midwife, one of our little mottos, we had lots of little mottos, one was... until you realize you have a choice, you don't. And we don't realize that we have a choice over how we think. And so we don't have a choice over how we think. We think how we think, and we think what our mind is telling us is true. That's how we are when we're not trained. As we train our minds, we begin to realize, I don't have to keep thinking that thought. It's not actually useful. It's probably not even true. Like I've got some bias against my neighbor. I don't actually have to keep doing that. I could get to know the neighbor and then I decide if my bias is true or not, for instance. So we actually have way more choice about what we think than we think. But until you train your mind, you haven't got any choice. Your mind is very powerful. And when it has an instant take on something, a pleasant thing, oh, I've met this really neat person. They are my new god, my hero. Instant take. We believe they're great. That's the mind telling you they're great. You have an instant hit. Somebody says, you know, something flattering. Okay, they are great, right? Okay, you want that. I'm falling in love with that person. That's a very superficial, very limited, but you believe what your mind is saying. Oh, they are. Look at this. They're like this, and they're like this. Your mind is spinning a whole story, and you're completely believing it. But it's your mind telling a story. You've just had an instant take. When you actually really get to know the scenario, often they're not that perfect, you know. They've probably got all kinds of weird, gnarly parts, just like the rest of us have. And then you change your story that you're telling about them. And you realize that those first stories your mind was telling you weren't that reliable at all. They were just instant opinions, but they were running you. I've got to... So when you look at yourself, you don't just look at yourself, you get to see your mind and all of the way it tells stories and convinces you. But the thoughts that the mind produces, the mind is a thought factory. When you watch it, you can watch your heart and your feelings and you can watch your mind and your thoughts. You realize that those thoughts are just thoughts. They're not the truth of the person who you've been telling is actually this saint. You discover, you know, over time that that was just a bunch of stories your mind telling you. And so we begin to actually question the authority of our thoughts. That's radical. Because without any training at all, we are utterly enthralled by our thoughts. They are not okay. You are not okay. You are fantastic. Whatever your thoughts are, you believe them completely. But they're not the whole story. It's just a drama. It's like a novel or a movie. And what we develop in meditation is the ability to discern the value of those thoughts. So it's kind of like, this is the skill that you learn. You're sitting on your couch and you're watching the TV. Those of you who've heard me talk know that I use this analogy all the time. You're watching the TV and let's say it's a comedy. But you're sitting on the couch watching a comedy on your TV. When you've got a meditator's mind, you know you're sitting on a couch and you're watching a comedy and it's funny. And you're laughing at it, but you know it's a comedy on the TV and you know you're on the couch. When you're not a meditator, you're in the TV and you're having a hysterical time. But you don't know that it's just thoughts. It's like reality. Or it's a murder mystery, you know, and you're all like, ah. But you don't know that you're actually on a couch watching a TV of a murder mystery. You don't realize what's going on. You're in it and you're scared. Well, that's what life is like for the untrained person. You're scared and you believe that person's the enemy or scary or you're paranoid or, you know, you're frustrated and blaming somebody and they're bad or you've seen this great person and they're wonderful and it's true. It's real for you. It's reality for you. When you're a meditator, you can sit on your couch, watch your mind, create a whole drama around this wonderful person. But you know you're doing it. And so it's not so, you're not in the power of it. You're not at the mercy of those thoughts. It's not running you. Your mind is not running you. But when you're not trained, the mind is running you. And it's running amok. And it's dragging you up and dragging you down. And it's a bad day. And oh no, why is it raining again? This is awful. I've got to live in another part of the world. And that isn't true. It's just a lot of thinking. And so you can see we actually have the reason we have all this tangled hair or bumpy sea or rough engines, whatever analogy you like, is because we believe everything we think. I should have brought it with me and I forgot. I have one bumper sticker. I don't like bumper stickers and labels and things. That's just one of the things I never relate to. But I have one, but it's on the magnets on my fridge. It's not stuck to my fridge. It's on magnets. And it says, don't believe everything you think. But until you are able to watch yourself thinking, you will believe everything you think. That's why your life is a tangle, and it's why we get so stressed. Meditators don't have to believe it. We have a choice. Do I want to keep thinking that thought about my mean neighbor? No, that's not very useful. It makes me feel awful and prevents any kind of understanding. And all of a sudden, we have an earthquake, and we're friends. Where were those thoughts that that neighbor was a pain in the neck when we actually are friendly? Or there's a snowstorm, you know? We're actually all become friends. You see that your thoughts weren't reality. They were just a story that have been co-opting you. So that's why we become free from the assumptions and worries and needs of our minds by seeing that. So the profoundest level of meditation, the benefits of meditation are liberation, meaning liberation from believing your thoughts without any choice. You're liberated from hating people because you understand them. You're liberating from needing a new car because you know you're going to get, as soon as you get a new car, somebody's going to scratch it and then the thrill is over, you know, it's going to get worn out and going to cost you a fortune to fix. Not so wonderful after all. You see that, you realize that. We're not so needy. And that's the wisdom that comes from a trained mind, right? So it calms you down. You get to understand more. You get to like and appreciate more. You get less upset with the difficult, less needy of the... And ultimately, you become free from unnecessary stress. Now, there's a good deal, don't you think? And it's easy to do and simple, but it's radical. It's not the way we've done it, so it takes practice. So we call it practice, meditation practice. Okay? Have I sold you a good idea anyway? I'd like any questions about any of those things, anything that wasn't clear or doesn't quite make sense to anybody. Or okay. So that's my first little lecture. And of course, you know this to some degree, which is why you're here, presumably. You want one of this. Either you want some calm or you don't want to be so critical with your partner or you want to have more joy in your life or whatever. Everyone has the same kinds of reasons why we want to meditate. We know it's a skill to help us be human beings with the fact that life is not always the way we want it to be. Please. And tell me your name.
Pauline.
Hi, Pauline.
So if you are a meditator, you, instead of being anxious, you try to understand why you are anxious, and then...
Let me explain how it works, Pauline. Pauline's question is, so say anxiety. You're a meditator, and you, through meditation, you really want to understand how would meditation reduce anxiety. It's really what your question is. So when we're anxious, we don't trust that things will be okay. We worry that when things aren't okay, we won't be able to handle it. So we're very busy trying to plan and organize and arrange because we're afraid of being upset or being out of control or being hurt or whatever. When we meditate, we see just how much anxiety and fear there is inside us. And what happens is through the practice of just staying in the present moment, allowing ourselves to calm down a bit, we, first of all, aren't so anxious just by the very fact that we're noticing our bodies, our breathing. We get more grounded and calm. We become more calm and less anxious, for one. It just happens naturally because we're not looking at the stuff that bothers us. We're looking at our breath, for instance, or our feet on the ground. So we're not triggering ourselves by the things that are worrisome so much. For one thing. Another thing is when we see ourselves being worried, we begin to be interested in how often we're worried. And we see that it's us rather than the things that are causing us to be worried. Usually we'll look at the things that worry us and we're worried by them. If we look at ourselves being a worried person, we start to have some compassion for ourselves being so nervous and so anxious. And we stop triggering ourselves by looking at the things that are going to upset us. And so that reduces the upset. So there's two things that reduce the upset. And then the third thing that reduces the upset is we get to realize through meditation as we do it more that worrying isn't worth it. That actually doesn't help anything, and in fact it's exhausting, and nothing has changed out there. And we realize that's really stupid. So why am I going to keep being quite so worried? But we've done it as a habit. We've done it all our lives as a habit. So we... That habit gets to change when we realize the cost of it on our systems. But we have to feel that cost. So by not looking at the things that worry us, but by befriending the worrier relaxes and is less worried. Things go on being unpredictable, just as they always did. But we aren't dependent on that for our well-being. That's how it works. If we keep looking at that and we don't know what's going to happen next, or we may be fired from the job, or something is insecure, life is insecure, we're going to keep on worrying. When we stop depending on that for our well-being and we look instead at our inner state, the inner state shifts and then circumstances don't get to it the same way. That's how it works. Clever. And you don't have to be God and change the world to make it secure, because you never would anyway. Just as soon as you've got your ducks all in a row, one of the ducks falls off. No. It's called, what we normally do is called rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And we're so preoccupied in rearranging deck chairs that we forget that actually we're not the captain of the ship, and it's all about icebergs and oceans anyway. And so we stop trying so desperately hard to make it all be rearranged, and we learn to ride the waves more. Another question, anybody? Please, and your name again, Laurie.
And I know it's not true, and I can feel the anxiety, the fear that it causes me, and it's demanding my attention, so I give it my attention. But yet it keeps coming out, like it's just, it's persistent, and it's frustrating and exhausting.
Yes.
And so maybe I don't know how to befriend it, but I can see it, but it seems to have a life of its own.
This is a great question.
This
is a great question. So this is Laurie. Did everybody hear her question? Her itty bitty shitty committee drives her crazy. Going on in her head. We all have them. What you're seeing already, because you're doing some meditation, is you can see that you have one, even. I mean, just to even say that means that you're on the couch and you know you've got this itty bitty shitty committee TV going on, rather than you are believing all of this stuff. So that's a step. But by seeing it isn't changing it. This is a very important question. By meditation, we don't actually change ourselves. We can't switch off. One way to think of it is we have been programmed, A, to survive as a human being by glomming and by preferring the pleasant and reacting against the unpleasant and so on. It's in our genes for millions of years, so we're not going to just suddenly not do that. The particular style, whether it's worrying style or whether it's, you know, just bitching style or whatever, busy, it doesn't stop. What happens, though, it goes, this is what I've often said, it goes from being to being and we're here, like, watching it being, oh, look at that. I'm worrying again. But because you're not so in the TV with it, it's not so powerful. And when it's not so powerful, we can forgive it, and we can tolerate it, and we can even laugh at it. And when it's not running us because we're not in it, when we catch it, it usually, for a moment, will stop. Because we're like, oh, I've seen you do your, I know what you're doing. And now I'm just worrying again. It's so silly. In that moment, you're not worrying. You're seeing that. And you'll be free of it in that moment. It'll come back because it's a program. And that program has been programmed in you for your whole life. But it won't run you for all day. You'll do it, then you'll realize, and then you'll be back here, and it'll be out here, and it'll be less and less and less. And soon it'll just be like, oh, here it goes again. Okay, whatever. So you get free of it bit by bit by being less of you is caught in it. It's like that. The experience is you're in it completely. You are run by it initially. Then as you practice more, it's instead of and part of you is seeing that. You're already in that stage. As you continue, more of you is the seeing. More of you is on the couch and less of you. It's amazing, but you're not just one thing. The mind can both observe and experience simultaneously. And we develop the observing part. And over time, that part grows. And the caught, reactive, hate this, love that, need that part gets smaller. And that shift, your center of gravity kind of grows. Your big, wise, healthy, wholesome, the kind part that you want to be grows. And the neurotic part that doesn't realize it's reacting shrinks. So you get to be more and more of your grandmother and less and less of your three-year-old. And that is not a completely even thing. At times you're really together, and at other times you've completely lost it again. But the losing it and getting all reactive diminishes, and is held with this kind, wise, much bigger, more saintly person, the one you want to be. That's how it actually works. So you have to be patient with yourself and allowing and realizing you're programmed. You know, you can't just like, if we could, we would all be perfect. We'd have no more problems, no more wounds, no more triggers. If we could think our way out of this, we would all be the Buddha, you know. It doesn't work that way. It's programming. So you have to that's why it's a training and a practice to run different wiring in your brain. And they've measured it, and it works, and the brain gets rewired, but it doesn't instantaneously. It's like growing. It's like plants, you know. You can't just say, okay, here, this fruit tree, we're going to turn you into an espalier. You're like, okay. You have to, like, take it out a little bit. You put a bit of a weight on a sack, and you, like, train the limb, and gradually, or like yoga. You know, you can't just suddenly do the splits, but if you do it gradually, you'll find your body opening and strengthening. And like any skill, it's a developmental thing. It's like playing musical instrument. You know, you can't just pick up a violin and play Mozart. Horrible to be, you know, but you eventually, same thing. Your name?
Helen.
Helen.
It's
interesting that we're taught to want bigger and bigger TVs. Yeah, right. That's right. We want more of them to get lost in. That's not a good progress for the human. I mean, I'm worried about the wiring of getting lost in screens. And I think that's not a good thing for freedom, real freedom. It's fun and distracting, but it doesn't actually help, I don't think. I think it was more useful to do petty point and have conversations with your family for long, dark evenings. You know, I think actually there was more wisdom in some ways anyway. Okay, so we've been sitting for an hour. Oh, please, yes, a question.
My name's Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Yeah. Yes. Yes, correct. Well, it's very wise of you to even know that that's what it's doing, but that's exactly what it's doing. And so in meditation, we're giving it other things to do. So it's like training puppies. And when you're training a dog, if you have any idea about training dogs, I don't have very much idea about it, but nevertheless, you give it tasks to do. And when you give it other tasks to do than run amok, then it has to do something else. And so by training it to do what you're telling it to do, not what it wants to do, you're training it out of that habit. And it'll do it for a few moments, and then it'll run off and do its other habit, and then you'll bring it back, and you'll do it again over and over and over to do what you're telling it to do rather than it thinking. And gradually, it would rather not be busy analyzing, because it's exhausting, and as you say, it's, you know, and it's also often not actually that right. You know, it's not that true, even. And so you give it other things to do, which you discover. But I haven't given you any of those instructions. I'm going to do that next. I just wanted to give you why we're here and how it works, general. Please.
It's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm just wondering if you would talk about how or whether meditation helps with decision making, because I really understand the concept that we can't help the weather.
Right.
Things that we truly can't change.
Right.
But there's so many things in our life, jobs, relationships.
Yes. Right. That's very important. And the thing about meditation is it's more kind of behind the scenes operating than the actual contents of your life. It's more about the process of being human than the detail of whether you should do this or do that or more of this. But what happens is your way of perceiving is less needy and irritated, because you have more ability to tolerate things. And so because we learn to be more calm, because we learn to be able to stay with what's happening and understand it more and feel it more, we can cope with and tolerate more, we then have a more stable foundation from which to make our decisions. And also, if we make a decision and find that it wasn't the best decision, we can then change and make another decision, and that's okay. Whereas initially, we're really worried you've got to make the right decision and then everything hangs on it. And so we don't mind so much. So we can change our minds, we can do something different. If this is happening, then it's okay until it isn't, so then we'll do something else, and that's okay still, and we're much more okay with what it all is. The decisions still have to be made, but the consequences are seen more wisely. We can really get that if I do this, then it will cause this and cause that, and that seems a good idea or not such a good idea. And when it unfolds in a way we couldn't predict and we don't know, we can adjust, because life is an endless adjustment, because there's always stuff that we never would have realized. We get to be more easy with all of that. So it helps, but it sort of subtly, it isn't overtly helping the content, because we're not looking at that. We're looking at our process inside. And that becomes more steady and more clear and more kind. Our decisions, therefore, will be more appropriate. That's the best way I can answer that question. But the thing about questions like that is you have to practice, and then you'll see for yourself how that works. So the first thing, the example I've always used, because this is the most obvious thing for me that was really helping, the untangling thing, I used to have a very difficult mother. At least I was very difficult with her, let's say. I mean, she was very difficult for me to be with. And she was often very argumentative and very critical, raging on, criticizing. And so we would get into these arguments. It was very hard, and she was very powerful. And so through meditation, my early days of meditation, I would do three things when I was with her, knowing that this was going to happen. We'd be in some... So I would angle around so that I had a window behind her, so that my eyes could be looking at her, but they were actually looking out the window, which gave me a bit of a relief. It wasn't just this. Okay, that already now I've got the space. The other thing I would do would be I would feel my feet on the ground, which was calming. This is through the meditation practices, which made me aware of my body. And the third thing I would do would I would be putting my attention on breathing at my nose, which was the first 10 years of my meditation Buddhist practice that I did. So I would be looking out the window, feet on the ground and breathing while arguing with my mother. So a lot of my attention was taken up with keeping myself calm instead of with her. So instead of it was like, ah. And I could find I could go probably 10 more minutes before yelling back. Well, that was a breakthrough. I mean, that was really helpful. And I found that myself. And so it made me realize I want to do more of that because I want to go 20 minutes. For instance, right? So it's like that. So how I said what I said or what it still happened, but I found more stability, more space. I could tolerate her. I could even feel sorry for her for ages before getting PO'd with her, you know. For instance, so it's like that. But you, if you do your own meditation training, which I hope you do, you'll see ways, little ways that it answers, there's lots of questions that you'll answer yourself by your experience. And that's the thing I like about this practice is the Buddha was this wise man, I'll tell you about his life a little bit later on the weekend, who said, he's so practical, he said, you have to do this yourself. Like you can't do it because someone, you can't do it on someone else's belief. Don't believe everything I say, but put it into practice and see if it helps you. And on your own experience, you will continue. If it's helpful, continue. If it isn't helpful, don't. Do the parts of it that work for you if it's helpful. And you know what helpful means. More ease, more joy, less upset, less fear, and so on. And so you find your own way, which is what I love about this practice because it works. And it works individually in different ways for different people, depending on their circumstance. So that's what. So I think it's great, but you'll see for yourself. Don't believe everything I say, just a little bit to get you going. We need teachers to begin with because it's radical. It's against the way we've survived, and so you need somebody to help you how to do it and tell you why and encourage you. As you do it bit by bit, you get your own encouragement. So one thing they say about this form of Buddhism I love is that we, if we're good teachers, we make ourselves redundant. Because gradually you do your own thing and you realize how it works. So, okay, good. Nice questions, thank you.